Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
People can change anything they want to. And that means everything in the world. Show me any country, and there'll be people in it. It's time to take the humanity back into the center of the ring and follow that for a time. You know, think on that. Without people, you're nothing. Without people, you're nothing.
Stoke the fire.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, or morning, or evening, or whatever the hell time of day it is, wherever in the hell you are. Welcome to episode 27 of Stoke the Fire. As always, we're your hosts, Matt Stocks and Jesse Leach. What's going on, Jesse Leach?
Hey, 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 hey. What's going on, people? How you doing, Matt?
Testing 1, 2. Check, check, check. I'm good. I'm excited for today's show. I'm excited for today's guest, and I know there's mutual respect and admiration that flows both ways, but do you and Benji know each other? Is there like a connection that pre-exists this moment, or is this going to be kind of the first time you've properly had a deep dive chat with him?
I've never had a deep dive chat, but you know, we've seen each other backstage at Download, and my favorite, which we'll talk about, was meeting him backstage at the Metal Hammer Awards and having an instant connection with him and an instant rapport. And I love the dude. I have tons of respect for him. And he's like a kinship. There's a kinship there. That's like the familiar spirit. He comes from the same sort of like idealism and what he wants for the world and his message and his music. So I have a ton of love and respect for this guy. But we'll get into that in the chat.
Yeah, you've already picked up on exactly what I want to discuss, which is exactly that, the message in your music. And although as characters, I feel you're very different, Benji, and we should say at this point, if you haven't already read our guest for today's show is Benji Webb from Skindred. And that the key difference between yourself and Benji for me is Benji's a real extrovert, whereas I think you're in more ways a bit of an introvert. But the message that you're trying to put out and the way which you try to get there and share this kind of ideology of unity, community, positivity, there's so much overlap and correlation. And I feel like I know this is going to be a conversation that goes in all kinds of different directions. And I'm just excited, as kind of I experience with the chat with Rao from Shikari, just to sort of sit back and watch two of my favorite people bond and connect over a plethora of awesome things. So I feel like without further ado, we should bring him onto the show. And when we do, I'm pretty sure he's going to hit the ground running, because that's the only way Benji rolls. So yeah, here is my dear friend, my birthday twin as well. We share the same birthday, myself and my dear friend, Benji Webb from Skindred.
Yeah.
We're trying a new form of introduction on this show as well, so it might not be as smooth as always.
Pardon in progress.
You hear him before you see him.
Benji, do you want to turn your camera on as well?
It's not on, is it?
No, it's not, mate.
The best thing about podcasts, and there's no fucking picture. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, no, mate, this one goes on YouTube.
There he is. What's up? See you. Yeah, man.
Dude, so I can see from the visuals that you are sat in your garden in Peel, Newport, Wales, UK, a place I visited many times. And I want to jump straight in, Benji, and kind of...
I want to go back to the time when I couldn't wake you up.
Go on, let's start there then. Go on.
I want to go back there, bro. I mean, me and you was drinking all night some whiskey or some crazy shit. And next thing you know, it's like, okay, Matt Stock, got to go.
Yeah, you had your girlfriend coming around in the morning.
I had my girlfriend coming in the morning. I want no traces of Stockness. No traces. Motherfucker, gotta go. So next thing you know, he's out the back. It's quarter to ten. I'm like, Matt. This motherfucker ain't moving, bro. He's moving.
We should say Benji gave me a Valium to help me sleep. He was like, my lady's coming around early in the morning. This is at about 3 a.m. It wasn't too
late.
And he said, take this and it'll knock you out. You'll get a good night's sleep. But for whatever reason, it didn't hit the sides. So I'm just there, like, trudging on. And
yeah, you're a zombie on your own, though. Like Jack Nicholson zombie, you know?
And what did you say to me? You said every time you tried to wake me up to go, I'd fall asleep again. And you're like, you look like McMurphy from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
That's exactly what it was. Dribbling. I was like, wasn't having nothing. Honestly. I'm like...
And I woke up in bed in London and I was like...
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did.
How did I get here? I was in Wales the last time I remember. That was the last time we saw each other as well, Benji.
Benji's, that's it.
That's an insight into my friendship with this man. We've had so many good times over the years. And, you know, we were sort of talking before we got you on, Benji, about, I think, a lot of the similarities that you and Jesse share. I would love, as we begin this conversation and start to unravel the stories, do you remember the first time you met Jesse, Benji, where and when that would have been?
I remember. I think it was in America. Was it in America, Jess? Well, to me, anyway, it was in America. And one thing I noticed... You had this battle jacket on full of Sky and Reggae stuff all over it. I noticed that.
I'm yeah.
Like, I know that band. Yeah, man. Yeah, I remember that. Because, I mean, this guy seems to kill Switch Engage and he's acting like Bob Marley, you know?
One of my heroes, yeah. No, it was actually backstage in England at the Metal Hammer Awards.
That'll work. But you had the battle jacket on though, right?
I had the battle jacket on, yeah. And you struck up a conversation with me and I turned and looked at you and I was like, oh, I know this dude because my band Seamless actually opened up for you guys in the States years before this. Yeah, so I already knew who you were and you were mentioning the reggae, patches.
Yeah, on the patches, yeah.
And then we immediately hit it off and talked about everything from Toots to Bob Marley to ska to Two Tone to Unity to Love.
Yeah, man. It was
I was like, this guy's my man. Like, it was like a 5-10 minute conversation, but. Yeah. I immediately was like, I love this guy.
The dance hall is my thing, though, you know, from a long time. I make a connection on that every time.
And then I also remember seeing you in passing at Download.
Yeah. I met you, I think it's like 3 or 4 times, you know.
Yeah. And it's always been love and respect, always been good vibes.
Well, for me, there's the reggae connection runs so deep in both of you. And I think both of you bring that spirituality and philosophy that you associate, I think, more with reggae music into the metal arena. You know, there's not many other bands that do that. Obviously, you know, Skindred does it a lot more with the sound. Jesse, perhaps with you, it's more just the message. But definitely I feel like the overlap there and I guess... To begin with, Benji, because you've got some amazing stories from back in the day that I know Jesse would love to hear. Yeah. Why don't you tell us a bit about way before your career in metal or rock or any of that thing, the sound system scene in Bristol in the UK back in the 70s?
When I was young, the first time I ever went to a show, my brother used to play in a band. He used to toast in a band. And there was a concert. It was a legalized cannabis campaign up North Wales. And I was in the house, and I knew my brother used to do these weird little late night trips and come back. And this is the first time I ever been invited on one of them late night trips. So anyway, so he says to me, get in the van, come along to the show. So I go to the show in West Wales, and it's a hippie commune, and people are just loving life and living together. And I see my brother on stage with his band called Beetroots. And I thought, I'm going to do that. Whatever it is they're doing, I want to do that from day one. Now, the first show I went to was in the Top Rank in Cardiff. There was an album called Two DJs by Clint Eastwood and General Saint, but it wasn't the Clint Eastwood that we know from Dirty Harry. It was the Jamaican dancehall singer, Clint Eastwood. And I went to see them. I rode my bike 12 miles to watch them perform. I rode on my bike down to Cardiff, me and my friend, and we had no money at all. So what we had to do was go into the club when the band was sound checking and hide in the stock cupboard, right? This was about 4 o'clock in the evening and the doors were at 7. So we snuck in the place when the band was sound checking and hid in the stock cupboard. And when we heard the people coming in the club, that's when we come out of the club and went inside and watched it. And when I watched them, once again, that feeling come to me. I'm like, I want to do that. Whatever they're doing, however they're doing it, that's what I want to do. From day one, dancehall, that's what I wanted to do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the infectious rhythm of the voice to me is what I've always loved about reggae music. Because I got into dancehall first before I started getting to the roots. Mm-hmm. You know, roots reggae to me is definitely...
Because roots, like when you say you got into the dancehall, what era was you into? Because there's different eras of dancehall.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely the more commercial 90s era. I'm going to out myself here. It was Shabba Ranks was the first dancehall that I heard. And then that opened the doors to like Buju Banton and some of the more...
Yeah, it opened the doors to that.
More spiritual end of things. But yeah, the sound of the voice, the syncopation, the way the voice,
yeah,
and even the patois, the stuff I didn't understand. That I actually had a book. I was so obsessed with Jamaican culture. I had a dictionary of like how to, you know, how to
translate it.
Yeah, I loved it. And I would walk around telling people, oh no, this is what he means when he says this.
Yeah, well, I had it firsthand. My family's they were from the West Indies, and We grew up by my father's from an island called St. Kitts, but we were grown up by Jamaican people. A lot of us would had babysitters who were Jamaican, and their culture seems real strong on us, you know. And we just grew up in that Jamaican tone, you know. So I felt really special because when I hear Jamaican people speaking, no one taught me this language, but I could understand everything. I could understand it all, and I'd be like, man, I can't speak French or German, but I can hear what they're saying and I know what they're saying. So when I started listening to the dancehall music, it was, I'd say it was like Yellow Man and people like that. You know, it was, yeah. So it was before that in the 80s, Sugar Minot, Dennis Brown, Gregory Isaacs. And as far as I'm concerned, when I watch Woody Woodpecker, he don't sound no different from Tenorsaw. You see what I'm trying to say? It's like the tones of their voices were like fucking cartoon characters, yeah. You know? And I'd be watching these guys, listening to them singing, and I'd be trying to manipulate them like Tenorsaw, like, whoa, oh, he's going to amp you, whoa. I mean, like, that's something, to me, I was like, this is so cool, you know what I mean? And I gravitated towards that, you know, from a very early age, and mimicked them, you know?
Yeah. I'd have to say a big up to Supercat, too. Supercat, yeah,
Supercat was the
old... Ghetto Red Hot, like that.
When you check Supercat, you got to check Nicodemus.
Yeah, I know Nicodemus. Yeah, yeah.
I think Nicodemus is the OG of Sean Paul. He's the OG of all them. He's the way how he flows on. That shit is the shit, bro. And I'm still doing that now. Still doing that on my shoes.
I still listen to all that stuff. I love it. It puts me in
modern dancehall for me, I can't really dig it because it's no different from, I'm sorry to show my age, but it's no different from electronics. And when they were playing, it seemed to be a bit more, you know, they actually had to play, you know, when you listen to Roots Radics and people like that, you know?
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Yeah. That shaped me for sure. And that was, you know, before I even got into punk rock, I was definitely listening to all that stuff. Yeah. And then I discovered, you know, bands like The Clash and Bad Brains. And that's kind of when the crossover started to happen.
Well, what came for me is like, I had all this reggae stuff going on at home. And also the whole, like, you know, all the dancehall stuff that my father and mother was listening to. But at the same time, I had the radio blasting all this punk rock shit. And I loved it. And I wanted that as well. And I was like, I feel terrible that I feel like I'm a traitor, you know, for some fucking reason. But then I just
said, that culture still prevalent, Benji, at that time in the late 70s? Was it still like you had to be, you know, one or the other? You couldn't be both?
I thought that in my mind, that I put that barrier up. But do you know what I mean? But there was a lot of the kids I knew, like when my brother's Rasta friends was coming over, they didn't want to hear the Pistols, you know. You know, and I'd be like, check
what
this.
About like two-tone bands like the Selector and the Specials? Were they accepted in the Rasta community or not? Were they too white?
I think they were too punk rock, bro. There was too punk rock. The Specials and the Selector were too punk rock. It's like, I know that what I do with Skin Dread is too much for some people, you know, because we use too much, you know, some of the guitar noises and shit. They can't take that, you know what I mean? But as a kid growing up, I remember going out and playing the Pistols in a party upstairs. My brother was having a party downstairs, and I was upstairs playing the Pistols. He's downstairs playing Roots, Radix, Dub, old school shit. I'm upstairs playing the Pistols, and this Rasta popped his head around the door. And he goes, is that the Pistols? And I was like, yeah. And he came in, he goes, can I borrow this album? I was like, borrow this album? And I thought, this guy's got to be cool, man. He wants to borrow. He's a Rasta with the dreadlocks, all that shit, and he wants to borrow the Pistols. He said, I'll bring it back next week, I swear. And he brought it back. And that made me go, wow, I got to open my mind. That made me, because I thought he wasn't going to like it and whatever, but that made me go, wow, I'm putting him against my pedestal, not the other way around, you know? And that's what made me realize that people dig what they do, you know? They dig what they do.
Yeah, and that's big coming from that scene and having that crossover. That's why I love Skindred and Dub War. Even like you can't really put a category on it. People ask you what it sounds like, but you just gotta not even just hear, but you gotta see Skindred.
Yeah. You know it. It's one thing. It's like we played a festival called Bloodstock on a weekend, and I know there was a lot of people who were like, "Oh, why are they on the bill?" And then when they seen us, they changed their hat completely. You know, they knew why we were on the bill, because we brought that unity sound, we brought that fun, we brought that energy. We made them laugh, we made them cry, we took them on a journey, and not many bands do that, you know.
Yeah, this is true, man. You guys are electric.
I want the money as much as the next guy, but I want to leave something in there too. Yeah. Leave a little something in with the people, you know?
Well, Bloodstock's an interesting one because it kind of, to begin with, was very metal in a specific way. Even Killswitch, I think, perhaps wouldn't have fallen into their metal line for many years. But obviously, over the course of, I guess, the last 5 years in particular, as the festival has grown and become more... successful, they have diversified within their metal remit.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, half of the bands I never knew, so it's still that way, you know. It's still that way. But what I found is that the first time we played there, people were like, why are they there? But after we played, they understood why we was there.
You brought it. Yeah.
And that's like last time, like on last Friday the 13th, we played there. And I you remember, I've been pent up for the last 2 years, like you, Jess, doing nothing, you know. But when I get the live show, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so thankful for it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, let's talk about that for sure. Yeah, let's go in on that. You've had the pleasure, Benji, of playing two pretty big shows in recent times, Download Pilot, Bloodstock. You've also got the Beautiful Days Festival in Devon coming up as well. So right. You'll have had a nice hat trick to reintroduce yourself to the big stage, big crowds. But, you know, 18 months of somebody as well like Jesse, who like does more than just sing songs. Both of you, for me, are people who bring people together through your music.
Well, that's the bridge building, bro. I think... Robert Trujillo said to me a long time that the music that he wanted to make was bridge building music, which took one community and led him to another community. And that's, I think doing that, whether it be from the black end or the white end of it, I think that's such a fulfillment. I really do. When I get messages saying, didn't like this kind of stuff before, dig it now. I think that's the fulfillment, you know?
100%, dude. That's why I still do it. Honestly, you know, there's a huge part of me that would love to just crawl away and hide a lot because I'm pretty much an introvert, but I feel so called to continue to do what I do because especially now, right? The world needs it so much more than
it ever did before, you know, much more for sure. You know, being out there and just like making people feel positive. Like for me, I enjoy just making people feel good. Even the security guards who are supposed to be working, they're just like screwing up their face and shit. I'm singing my heart out to them. Yeah. You know, every time, because you know, especially in days like this, when we're losing so many good friends and family, you don't know when it's going to be your turn. So you can, every opportunity to do it, I want to do it to the maximum. Even like in rehearsal, I'm busting my ass, and it's only me singing to the guys because you don't know, you know. So you just gotta give it all you got every time if that's what's in you.
Yeah, I love that attitude, man. It's honestly what's been keeping me going these days because I've had some pretty low days. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's so uncertain. It's so strange. You make these plans. You don't know if they're going to go through. And like, I love that attitude. It's a beautiful way to live. Like, you don't know.
No, well, that's why it's like, you know what I mean? I think when I'm 50, can't even fucking remember, 54 now, right?
Yes.
And I'm losing friends like boom, 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 boom. And you can't even put like, I'm so-and-so is going to go next or so-and-so. So I look at it like every day is a fucking chance to do the best, live the best day I possibly can. And even when like you said about being depressed, I get fucking low, bro. I get the lowest of the low. You know what I mean? Everybody feels like when they're low, that's the burden is the heaviest, you know? But I got to make sure I fight through that to get to the other side. And that's what pulls me through because I know the lows, the highs outweigh the lows. And that's what's important to remember, you know? Because when you're going through hell, just fucking keep on going, bro.
We say that all the time on this show. Yeah, you've just got to keep on going. Like, you know, I know you love your neighborhood, and although you love playing shows, you're also somebody who likes to return to home. Home's so important to you, and you've got a lovely house, you've got a lovely garden, you've got a great community. So how has the last 18 months for you been? I imagine you would have had it better than some in the sense you do love where you come from and your home situation is a positive one.
I've got a back garden for a start, Matt, because let's go way back to this thing when it started. When people were allowed outside their house, basically, I got a garden, a beautiful garden. I got friends who was trapped in flats without the back garden, having an hour to walk out and having to go back home. And I'm thankful for what I got, you know what I mean? But even no matter where you are, when you can't do what you really want to do, it's like, if I get money from the government for this thing, to subsidize me, I don't really want the fucking money. I want to be playing shows. You know, I want to be out there doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as I could say, there was no excuse for, you know, not doing it. You know what I mean? Because people seemed all right at the time, but then things changed quick, you know?
Yeah, they sure did, man. And I love going back to your fighting spirit. I see you on social media, and it's a pleasure to follow you because I see you exercising all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Now get up in the morning, and you've already gotten at it, obviously because of the time difference.
Yeah, but yeah. Oh, I'll be honest with you, Rod. Since this thing started, I was on stage in the UK one show, and my son came backstage and said, "Dad, you killed it, but you look like a fat fuck." Straight
that's
up, Jeff.
Familial love right there.
Straight up. And I was like, it was because I was backstage. I just come off stage at Reading Festival. It's everybody, the record company, everybody's buzzing. I'm looking at my son, get the fuck out of here. But it fucked with my head, bro. Yeah. It stayed with me, and I couldn't shake it or much. So Christmas came around. I said, "What you want for Christmas?" Well, all my kids. One says the TV, one says this, one says driving lessons. My son says, "Give me 6 months of your life, Dad. Six months of your life. Every day I'll tell you what to do. Every day I'll tell you what to eat." Actually, he said 3 months. He said, "After the 3 months, do what the fuck you want. If you're unhappy with what you see, do what you want." I said, "Oh, you know what, son? January, let's do it." I did it. 3 months later, I'm like, thank fuck that kid told me. Thank fuck I listened. Honestly, I don't even think, you know, in all honesty, guys, I'll be honest with you. I know for a fact, I don't think I would have been on this earth if I kept on doing the way I was living my life without caring about myself, without caring anything. It's like, now I think a little about, it's not like I've stopped having fun. I just think a little more about it now. Whereas before, I go to a barbecue and have 8 hot dogs. I'll only have 2 hot dogs now.
Well, let's be honest, man. Like 5 years ago, you were probably double the size that you are now.
I got on the scales in boots. I did, Matt and, my mate was going to boots for something and I was with him. So I said, I'll go on a scale. So I put 50 pence in, went on the scales. He said 19 stone 10. And I went, "Oh, this is fucking broke. Give me some more change, bro. Give me some more change." Give me more change. I got on again and said the same thing. I was like, I was in shock. And I think even though that happened a long time before my son said to me, "Get your shit together." I think that was the catalyst that sort of said, you know what, a given opportunity, I got to drop this weight. And I'm thankful because mentally it's been such a blessing having this, having that, going to the gym or getting on my bike and doing a 10 mile ride, you know, every day. And it's not like a chore. I feel like I've got to do it. Even when I'm sick, I'm like, I got to go gym. That's the best place to be, you know? And I just know that that's helped me through so much. I watched the show the other day we did at Bloodstock and I thought, wow, you know, I couldn't have done that a few years back. Not to that extent anyway, you know? So exercise, people, get in the gym.
Yeah, and it affects your mental too. That's what I was driving at too, is how I, you know, I've been quote unquote busy in my own head with whatever has been going on in my life, and I haven't been getting out lately, and I notice a huge difference because I love to ride my bike, I love hiking.
Yeah.
I haven't made a lot of time for that, and how important that is, because it totally affects your mental, and then, you know, vice versa, mind and body and mind. It's so important, especially, you know, with going through what we've gone through in society. And I love seeing that on your page. And I'm with you, man. If I didn't start getting my shit together, I'd be dead too. I was having heart issues because I was eating bacon steak. You
know? Well, I mean, like I said, I still enjoy food, but I just don't eat as much, bro. You know, and I think it's the whole gym thing. If, you know, I'll be honest with you, if I don't go to gym, I don't feel right, bro. The only time I feel right not about not going to the gym is when I get fucked up the night before.
And yeah.
Like, be wise now. Don't be stupid. You're not going to go to gym stinking of alcohol, scaring all the fucking people.
Well, there's a couple of things that I wanted to ask you about. And the first was, like, how quickly did you notice not just the physical shift, but as you are beginning to work out regularly and that your body is changing, is your mind changing in sync and you're already noticing the mental benefits alongside the physical of feeling so much better about yourself the minute you do it?
They just come at the same time. The whole of that just happens at the same time. You feel much stronger. Like I said, if I don't go to gym and I hang around doing nothing, I don't feel like my day is complete. I need to start the day. I know it's addiction, and I'm fucking glad. This is the best addiction I ever had. I know when the morning comes, I'll be like when the last time I put my sneakers out on my pants and my jacket was when I was 11 in school, you know, going to high school. I do it most mornings, honestly, excited to go, excited. And plus the fucking banter at the gym is incredible as well. So, you know, that helps.
There is when you're in there. I see you filming in the gym. It's amazing. You're doing like reality TV show
it's
videos.
Like EastEnders in that fucking place, bro. Some of the stories are fantastic, you know. Just well, keep your mind occupied.
The other thing that I was super inspired by is we all know that you can have the best intentions with lifestyle, diet and exercise, but then when you go out on tour, it can be very hard to keep up with it. And a lot of people I've seen over the years have thrown certain good habits away the minute they get back out on tour. But what you were doing pre-COVID, Benji, is you'd be, you know, traveling all over the world and you'd be going and finding local gyms in every city.
I was making a game of it, bro.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, Matt, I know I'm a lazy fat fuck and wants to sit down and do nothing. I'll be honest. But I was like testing myself and going, you know what? Every fucking day you go to a town, whether it's Dusseldorf, whether it's Hamburg, whether it's Amsterdam, whether it's St. Petersburg, wherever you go, you got to find a gym. And I was having the fun of the gym finding was sometimes you'd end up in state-of-the-art gyms and other times you'd be like in the fucking Victorian shitholes. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I still did my hour. I still did my hour of cardio and a little hour of weights. And that became a game for me every day doing that, you know? So that was something that I look forward to doing again on the next ones, because I'm in the gym every day. As I said, I'm not saying I look like a fucking Greek god, but
dude, you're 54. You look incredible, man.
I feel good, bro. I feel good. And it's funny because the way I thought when I was 22, I still fucking think like that. You know, I'm the same guy. You know what I mean? Nothing changes, you know, in life. So, you know, I just take it as it comes and enjoying it, bro. You know, and another thing I like to say, I don't feel like my life has started yet. I know that sounds crazy, but I know I did a lot of shit, but I just think like this is the beginning and, you know, shoot me for that. But I just feel like that's just what comes into my mind when I think about my life, you know?
That's amazing. I love hearing that because I feel the same way, you know?
So I'm saying, bro, and it ain't just you and me. I don't feel like, oh, I'm in my 30s, I was this, or, but I feel like I was just packing my bag, getting ready to go where I'm going, you know, just getting my shit together through all that time. And now I'm like, I'm ready to go. Where are we going? This is going to be great.
I love it because we need that, man. The message you carry is something I identify with so much, and it gives me hope as somebody who's been trying for years to put that message out. I wouldn't say trying. I have been putting that
message. Yeah, you do. Yeah, yeah. That's what people get from you.
But that's important. You know, again, I have to throw it back to, especially now, I see it constantly on social media and it affects my spirit, but it also encourages me and pushes me to continue to put out a message of positivity, unity, like that's so important.
Yeah.
And, you know, piggybacking on the message now of you, like getting your health in shape and mm-hmm. all of that. I have a lot of people reach out to me on a regular basis talking about mental health. And it always goes back to me, the messages I send to people about physical. So, and I always get the question of how do I start? People are just, you know, I tell them to try to find things that make them happy, things you can enjoy. So what would be your message to somebody who's like overweight or unhealthy and wants to get started? What's the first step? What would you say to somebody?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, I say that, I know not everyone can do this, but walking is the start of every journey, you know? Walking is the start of every journey, bro. Even if it's like...
That's where I'm at. I don't quite exercise yet, but walking is my shit.
Matt, let me tell you something. There were some mornings I woke up and I just walked for an hour, and then I walked for 2 hours. And next thing you know, I'm walking for 3 hours and I'm seeing things in my neighborhood that I've lived for over 40 fucking years that I've never seen in my life because all I'm ever doing is driving past.
Yeah.
So it's a great way of just getting balanced. And one thing, I know I take my phone for the time and all that shit, but not picking up the phone and just walking is incredible because we spend so much time on this fucking bullshit thing.
Yes.
We spend so much time, we do. You know, from the time you go to bed, I mean, I started leaving this shit downstairs when I go to bed because I'm scrolling through fucking bullshit at 6 o'clock at 10 o'clock at night. Just put it down, man. Put it down and go and find yourself, you know? So walking, I'd say, no matter where you are, put your phone down and just walk. Even if it's 20 steps around the fucking hood. You know, just start walking, you know. I think that's
love that. I was doing 10 miles on tour. That was my thing. 10 miles. Like, really? If I go out and do 10 miles that day, I'm good. And it helps.
That's what I'm saying. It's like what you just said. Then it's like I said about challenging myself every day, you know, just saying, right, I'm not going to smoke a cigarette until after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, just tell, you know, it's your body. You can fucking do what you want with it. So you just sort of like tell it what to do and then have that battle with yourself. And it's fun.
It is. The inner battles are fun. They keep your mind sharp, don't they?
Yeah, man.
I wanted to ask you this, Benji, like in the last 18 months or so, obviously the world's been changing a lot, despite the fact that everything's shut down. I know around last summer when everything was stirring up with the Black Lives Matter movement, like for a performer like yourself, you would have wanted to have been touring and on stage at that time, because then you can bring your message that you've always brought to people. How tough was it for you watching that unfold? Kind of feeling like you didn't have a voice at that time because you weren't in front of, you know, large crowds getting to spread that message of positivity.
You know, honestly, Matt, I don't think that it's the sort of question that it ain't something that you just see and just jump and start running your mouth about it. I thank God that I wasn't on stage and I had time to think about what was being done in front of me and what was saying, because sometimes you think you're saying the right thing. Next thing you know, fucking people are eating you up, man. So I'm glad that I wasn't on stage because I might have said the wrong thing too soon or the right thing too soon. Can you see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Sometimes you see things and you're in a situation that you open your mouth too quick. You know, so I'm glad I wasn't on stage that night that George Floyd was hurt, because I would have said shit and I would have got it wrong. You know, so I think that was a blessing as much as a curse.
Well, that's wisdom speaking right there. I think that's with any situation, that knee-jerk emotional reaction you can have, because the media does that on purpose to cause that reaction.
I know. I know. Another me would have been saying some shit that he didn't even know all the facts, but he's putting it all together. And I know that's what I would do, and make myself and make the organization look fucking stupid. So it's better to get your arsenal together, get your fucking bullets in order before you start shooting guns.
Yeah. You know? I back that 100%. I usually keep my mouth shut for at least a few days and digest, sleep on it, and then...
You got to remember, as much people love you, fucking hate you, and they're waiting for you to fall down, bro. You know, so you just watch yourself. And like I said, Matt, with the Japanese children that they said I was talking shit about, you know?
With baby metal, yeah, just for the context.
I learned a lot from that, bro. I learned a lot from that. You just got to be careful what you say to people. You know, just be careful. And even with sometimes when you don't say it, other people will put it in your mouth and say you said it.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope, man. When you're dealing with media too, because they're always looking for the thing the tagline that they're going to
use. But the thing is that it's not media. It's that kid down the fucking street that works at Asda. It's the kid that works at Publix. You know, you're dealing with them people. And no matter what they say, people jump on that and then they expand it. You know, so I'm glad I was home for all that shit, so I could actually watch just like any other Joe without the voice and watching, and then do the calculations to make it right later on. Because now if I mention Black Lives Matters, I know what the fuck I'm talking about. Then I didn't know what the hell I was talking about.
Facts.
Mm-hmm.
What other lessons have you taken from this time of reflection, Benji? It seems like you've been doing a lot of thinking, and it's amazing to hear somebody, as I know, who's always been so vocal sometimes in the past, and as you say, like, has strong opinions and, you know, perhaps doesn't always consider every argument, just says, speaks their heart. And that's, you know, one of the things I love about you.
It's dangerous to speak your heart, but at the same time, you got to think about what you're going to say. Reaction is easy. It's like, you want to say something about the Taliban? You can say it quick right now, but you just gotta back up and watch it just for a minute. You know, that's been my attitude for a while now. You know,
I love it. Yeah, it's amazing to hear, man. Amazing to hear. What else has been going through your mind during this time with a lot of time on your hands?
I'll be honest with you. It got to the stage at some point throughout the pandemic thing that I thought that we would never do what we did. Well, I would never do what I did for the last 2 weekends. The bloodstock thing on the pilot, watching them people dancing together and enjoying themselves together, no masks on, people just rocking out. I mean, like partying like it was 2019, baby.
It was dope. I was there on the Sunday. And
you have to excuse. I got this fucking chest infection. It's kicking my ass, bro. You have to excuse me.
That's all right, man.
But yeah, it got to a stage where I'd look at my girlfriend some days, especially when that, it was, because I don't know what it was like for you, Jess, but over here, it was pretty fucking Scareville. They were scaring the bejesus out of us. I'd pick up my phone. People would be sending me shit, which was disgusting. I wouldn't. and everyone was just so scared. You know, I can, you know what I'm saying? And I sat there going, you know, are we ever going to come right? So when I walked on the stage and I seen 20,000 people, no masks, everybody close, pit going off, circle pit, all that shit, I said it was like partying in 2019. And I hope that we continue.
Retro.
You know what I'm saying? It was only 2 years ago, but we partied like it was. It ain't like 99, bro.
No, it's not.
Yeah, we'd need no phones for it to be like 99, wouldn't we?
Oh, bro, no phones would be the best party you could ever go to. You know that thing called memory? Wow, yeah. That'd be fun to use, huh?
Well, also just being present, I find myself, because I've done this a lot lately. I just put my phone on airplane mode and use it as a camera when I'm out in nature or whatever. But I'm not even doing that. When you put it and you don't even take it with you, you process things so much differently. It's a whole other world, and I recommend anybody listening or watching.
I'll be honest with you, bro. I used to not take my phone to the gym, right? But I used to train with a partner, and all I want is someone who can do my little stupid, yeah, man. This machine's kicking ass. Fuck me, man. That movie last night was badass. You know, that kind of bullshit. And I need someone to do that. So I started taking it, but you know what? I'm going to have to find someone who actually films me every day and leave it. No, I'll be honest with you, Matt, it was the best fucking time when I left that thing at home, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, you know, and then it just creeps in. And now I'm going, yeah, baby, look at me on this machine.
Dude, the videos that you share, though, I mean, not only are they hilarious and entertaining, but I see in the comments, people see what you put out and it inspires them to go out for a walk, to get on their bike, to rejoin the gym.
I look at my, sometimes I after like doing like fucking 400 days in a row of the same shit, I say to people, you know what? I'm sorry because I'm pissing my fucking self off doing this. Yeah. I really am. It's like, oh, this fucking prick every day. But you know what? I know if there were 6 people out of 200 who was inspired to do it, it's worth it. So fuck you, 200. You
yeah, exactly. Well, I have to tell you, it inspires me. There are days where I'll see shit on your feet. I'm like, my man. Yeah,
that's fine. He's doing it. He's doing it again. And that's all I'm saying. It's like when I get this chest infection. I got this chest infection. Listen, I've had 2 years sat doing fucking nothing, right? This is incredible, Matt. Nothing, doing nothing at all. In the house, all I do is go around the fucking store for Julie. That's all I do, right? So anyway, next thing they say, there's a gig you're playing. I haven't been sick in 2 years, bro. The Thursday we rehearsed, I woke up sick as fuck. I looked at God and said, you joking? What are you doing? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, what? Your gods, what's happened? So anyway, go on.
I was going to say, with you though, you know, I've seen you on tour sick, you know, and when singers are on tour, I don't know a singer who hasn't done a tour and gotten sick for a huge chunk of it. But even when you're sick, dude, like your voice, and this is something, I know you're the envy of so many singers because you just have that thing. That is, I don't know whether it's just like in your DNA or your body, what it is, but you're just indestructible. And that voice of yours, like, I'll see you smoking all night after the show. You know,
see, that don't help.
No voice rest for you. No fucking warm-ups.
And going to loud clubs and DJing. You know, I don't know, Matt. I just got one of them. You know, like some people are just strong. Listen, I got friends who smoke crack all day long. Right? All day long, from morning to night. They rub your mother's teeth out of her mouth. And when they take their top off, they cut the fuck. Like this, and they ain't even trying. Nigga be like, hey. And they ain't even trying. They take their top off, and me in the gym all day long, them boys just got it. And I think, no disrespect or anything, I think in there, it's a real strong crackhead.
Yeah, yeah. The resolution just knows no bounds, man. It's so amazing.
Like I said, it's like, listen, I woke on Thursday, obviously, I went to rehearsal, and I said to myself, like I'm saying to you now, right? I said, well, it wasn't my throat was in, but my chest was tight, like a knot's in it, you know? So anyway, we got to the club, and it was the rescue rooms in Nottingham. There was no one in there, just the guy who opened the door and let us in and let us out, right? I got on stage, the band's there, a couple of the guys from the crew, and we were going to do the whole set all the way through. And I think, you know what? I haven't done this since I did the pilot, which is like a month ago. There's only two ways to play this. Give it all you got, even though you're sick, or pussy out on it, you know? And, you know, I got on that stage and I just played and I performed my ass off for that guy who was there. The one guy who opened the door. He might have even heard of the band, but I wanted to leave an impact with him. And I couldn't help it. It's like I felt possessed to actually perform the fucking shit out of the microphone and give it all I got, even though it's just me and a guy. I could have sat on the floor like that and went, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but then I thought to myself, this could be your last chance, baby. You know, you got to give it what you got. And that was it. So anyway, finished the thing, went downstairs. The guy said to me, dude, awesome. And I was like, thank you. The only person in the audience said awesome. I was like, yes. One man, one audience. I still got him. That was cool. So anyway, I went back to the hotel, sick as fuck. Sick. And I'm thinking, why are you forsaking me now, like? 2 years of being healthy as fuck, and I get a show, and you want to, and this is what happens. I woke up in the morning, the bus was coming, got myself some honey and lemon and some other bullshit, some Jamaican crazy stuff, drunk that down, and you know what? Showtime come, I hit it. Couldn't believe it, bro.
Of course you did. So what you do?
I was like, this is weird. I felt like Babe Ruth, you know, out the park.
Well, mind over matter and that old school Jamaican medicine, man. That's
I know, bro. Honey and lemon, bro. And then one thing I heard about bay leaves. You cook?
Oh yeah, I cook all the time.
Well, listen, let me tell you something. Forget putting bay leaves in food. Drink it, bro. Drink.
Yeah.
Forget putting, because I mean, look at it. Taste. When you drink bay leaves, there's something special in there, bro. I mean, I put it in my rice. I put it in loads of different curries and stuff. But the other day, someone said to me that the kidney stones and all the stuff that runs out, boil it up, like just put it in a pot and just boil bay leaves. I've been doing that for the last 2 weeks, and I feel really good doing it. I think it's strong.
I have to do that. Every morning I wake up, I do ginger, cinnamon, honey. So I'll start throwing bay leaves in. I'll report back.
Check this. So this morning, right, I said to myself, okay, I'm going to clean out the cupboard where I keep all the spices. So I go in the cupboard. Spices are up there now. I opened the thing, and what do you think fell out? The fucking saffron. It cost £3 for saffron, bro. Oh, and yeah. The old spice that fell on the floor, all over the floor, was saffron. I was like, you know what? This is what the day's going to be like.
The tests are coming in left, right, and center for you, mate, aren't they?
Saffron. It wasn't even thyme or fucking Oregon here. That's the saffron. It cost the most. Yeah. But I'm winning.
Yeah, that's what's up when you have a spice cabinet that's like that. My spice cabinet is exactly the same way. It's bursting with shit.
My whole house is bursting with shit. I remember when I was an orphan, I looked at my fucking dead dad, and when I got nothing, now I'm like fucking fast forward like 40 years. I'm like, I got so fucking much. you know, it's ridiculous. Yeah, man.
Well, that's the key to, I think, the key to any good recipe is the spice. It doesn't matter if what you're eating, whether it's vegetables, vegan, steak, it does matter. It's all about the spices, about the spices. Yeah. If you know how to spice something, then you're golden. You're good.
What's your dish? Like my dish, I got a few dishes which I would lay down if you two come to the house. What's your dish, bro?
My dish?
You look at Matt and you look at Benji and go, I know them fuckers are going to love what I cook. Boom, what's it going to be?
All right, I got you. This is a new one for me because I'm off meat for the most part, except for fish. I love fish. But in my house, the dish that we would make for company, mm-hmm. you get lion's mane mushrooms, a big old lion's mane mushrooms, right? You soak it in soy sauce, liquid smoke, a little bit of brown sugar, some black pepper, and some spices. And then we press them with two cast iron pans.
I know the hard ones.
Yep. Sear them down real, real nice. Put them on the grill to finish them off. We do steamed greens, whether that's broccoli or asparagus, with a lot of raw garlic mixed in there.
Yeah.
And then a mashed potato with some, you know, coconut milk mixed into it with some vegan butter. And let me tell you, those lion's mane, if you do it right, it's the
closest. I never even heard of them.
Oh, man. They're so, look it up, lion's mane. They're so good.
Lion's mane mushrooms.
Yeah.
All right.
So good for you. But the texture, when you're done, it is the closest thing you'll get to a filet mignon. Like, it's just when you cut into it, the texture, and then if you put it to char on the outside, the insides get that smoky soy sauce. Man, it's out of sight. That's the dish.
Come with your house, mate. Gonna have to, because there's no use me trying that, because it's gonna taste like shit. No, listen, me and Julie go to a restaurant, and they serve us some shit, and I'm like, babe, we should try this. She's like, yeah, let's try it. So we go home, get the ingredients. A couple of weeks later, it always comes out like
this. Wah, wah.
Yeah. During the pandemic, I mean, that's all we did.
I got some that I'd hold against anybody, right? But when I always try, if I tried to do that shit where you didn't, I need to come to your house, eat that food first. That's the vibe. Yeah, man.
That was most of the pandemic, was just messing with recipes and coming up with, because that's all we could do. That's all we could do. So I'd just be cooking.
I follow the rules. I'll be honest with you. I follow the rules. I mean, like, I had fucking nothing to do, and I didn't have no answers either. So why the fuck am I going to try to fight the rules? Because I ain't got no answers.
Yeah, no? Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
How many grandkids you got now, Benji?
I have got 14. They tell me 14.
14.
And I don't like fucking any of them.
That's amazing. Like a true Jamaican West Indian.
I know. I listen, bro. I said to my daughters, I put some Velcros on your knees. When you hear the sound, stop. I don't need no more, bro. But you know, I mean, the little grandchildren, they're little grandchildren. But I like the big ones now. The big ones are fun. You know, they're troublesome. They're becoming into themselves. And, you know, they see me doing my shit and they're like, take me to a show. And I said, I haven't took it yet, but I will. You know, so I'm yet to take any of my grandchildren to a show yet. So which should be fun.
Oh, wow. I mean, you know, it's one thing I love about you is the time that I've spent with your, you know, extended family, close family, even the friends that you have in your neighborhood. Like, you know, people are drawn to you and you know, you're the host. And there's kind of like what you put out on stage, that light and that radiance that exudes just off you in the street day to day.
Good. I remember I had to fucking work at that all the time. Now we're extrudes. Brilliant.
You're always shining, my friend. Yeah, always shining.
Good, bro. That's good.
How important was music for you, man? In, you know, the sense of like, because, you know, I know you had a tough upbringing and, you know, there was definitely a time when things could have probably gone another way. Not quite so happy an ending. And music, it seemed like, was the thing that got you out of a bad situation. Was it purely and simply music, or do you think a lot of it was that kind of, you know, self-drive that you also have as well?
I don't know. I think the self-drive came from music, really.
Right.
Listening to the Pistols and listening to the Clash and listening to all them bands. I actually listened to some of the words, like, you know, do better, strive for better. You know, they're trying to do this to you. I actually believed them. And I think that helped me a lot growing up, you know. And that's what made me want to do, to say something to the people. I mean, first of all, I didn't give a fuck if I got a number one singing Back to Life by fucking Soul to Soul. That would have been cool for me. But times change. And Back to Life is a great song, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
Life changes. And there's things you want to do within music, you know? And that, I think when it got to the stage where being a black guy in a predominantly white club and seeing all these people fucking digging what you're saying and digging what you're doing, that really was excitement for me. That made me want to do it more and more, like, you know? Because it's like, I just want people to see that we're all the motherfucking same. We're all the same, bro. You know?
I got that from Bob Marley, learning that he was half white. It inspired me a lot because he was someone I looked up to so much as a young kid.
Yeah.
And something as simple as him saying, don't worry about a thing. Every little thing is going to be all right. And tears in my eyes as a teenager.
I believe it when Bob says it. It's funny, you know. Some things about, like, some of the, I got one of my favorite albums is Survival by Bob Marley. That's an album that Dan wants to call the next Skindred album Survival, you know.
Love it.
You know? That's what he wants to call it. But Survival for me is an album I put on from beginning to end, and every song is empowering, every song is enriching, every song you get something from. And if you don't get something, it makes you think about somebody you once loved. And I think that Survival album is strong, man.
Well, that energy he put out, when you see it, you know, it's one thing to hear it, but when you see footage of him, he's one of those few people, you know, very few people have that energy where it's just, I feel like a line straight from God to him. Like, he was just sent here to put that message out like that.
The best thing I heard about Bob Marley is he was not a fucking really nice guy.
Yeah.
I like that, because that makes him real. Because you can say the things you're saying on stage but not mean it, you know?
Yeah.
And because how many people come to me and they say to me, oh, this lyric means that? I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm telling you, bro.
I ain't been nicking in ages.
It's incredible. But what I'm trying to say is that as much as Bob did, he was human like me and you.
Yeah.
And not everybody liked him. And he complained about the rider. You understand? Yeah.
That's, no, I love it. But that's some of my favorite stuff.
When someone said to me the other day, and I believe the guy who said, because he's been playing session with reggae music for fucking since the 60s, and he's still doing it.
Yeah.
And he said, Bob was not a nice guy, you know. Bob was a realist, and he would tell your blood clot if he won. And I love that, because it made me go, yeah. Because he's not always like, I bless you. He's not the fucking Pope, is he?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He's taking a shit and smoking weed. That's what I like. We got to keep the realism in them, because that's what people, because I ain't a shining light. I'm just a guy just like anybody else, and I want people to know that. It's like I did something at the school the other day, and they said that I am a I forgot the word again. I did this the other week. What's the word when you when people look up to you?
A hero?
No.
Role model? Role model?
Role model.
Role model. That's the word. I could. The other day, it did the same word to me. I said to people, I'm not a role model, you know. Don't look at me. I fuck up like everybody. You know, that's the way my life is. You know what I mean? And that's why I want people to know that as much as we enjoy doing what we're doing, we're still going to have an argument in Asda with a fucking woman who's giving a shit. You know, yeah. Still going to be that guy, you know. You should be responsible for your actions. No, honey. No, I'm just like you, fuck up, you know. And that's the beauty of it. And when they said that about Bob and the stuff, the realism in it, it makes me feel better about it. I'm not talking about being a real asshole all the time, but not taking no shit.
Yeah. Well, being real is good because people can relate to that shit. You know, nobody wants to be around someone who's like the Pope, you know, unless you want to be like a religious or a cult icon.
That's the vibe. Yeah.
No, I feel that, man. I love that. That's the stuff I can relate to. I love seeing interviews with him where he's like, people ask him questions.
He gets all pissy. I tell you, he gets all pissy, don't he? I love that shit. And John Lennon was the same too.
Yeah.
John Lennon would get all pissy and walk out on you. And Johnny Rotten's even the fucking worst.
Yeah, Matt knows.
Johnny Rotten, like, I mean, the first time I met Johnny Rotten, I said, can I have a picture? He went, no.
Yeah.
I said, okay.
Yeah, I got the same from Keith Morris. We were playing a festival and Flag was there, Black Flag, whichever one it was, I don't remember. Yeah. I went right up to him and he. This is his reaction to me. I was like, you know, Black Flag, blah, blah. He's like, meh. That was it. I was like,
listen, I went up to Billy. I was I'm not a massive fucking ACD, what they call him, fucking ZZ Top fan, right? But Someone said to me, there's Billy Gibbons. I said, that's cool. I gotta get a picture of Billy. That's cool. I know Billy's an icon. Let's go check Billy. So I'm at breakfast now. So Billy's there with me. So he walks up to get some more shit or whatever at the canteen. So Billy walks up. I think this is my time. The security's at the table. I'm walking up with Billy. So Billy walked up and I said to Billy, hey, Billy, would it be cool if I took a photograph with you? He said, yeah, son. You just got away from me to put my uniform on.
Love it.
Because he can't be pictured out of his garbs. Yeah, I love it.
Put the glasses on. I was like, that's some G shit right there, bro. Yeah, son. Yeah, wait for me to put my uniform. I was expecting him to pull a jacket or something. The guy just drew it out of his pocket and put his glasses on, bro. But yeah, that's some cool shit. Yeah.
Never. It's funny, man. Some people, when you meet them, might be, you know, be having a bad day, and they're just not in the mood.
I have all the time, bro. I say to people, if you meet me three times, and I'm an asshole every time, I'm an asshole. Simple.
There you go.
Yeah.
Three rules and out, bro. Three rules and out. I mean, I'm sure there's people who say, yeah, he's a fucking asshole. But you know what? I'll tell you another thing, Matt. It's the way you approach them as well.
Yeah.
It goes to do with that as well, man. If you start fucking, if you're stood there going, oh my God, I got you an album. I got you an album. Like, it's embarrassing. Get the fuck away from me.
Yeah. It goes both ways, doesn't it? It goes both ways. Ways.
You come up there going, I'm not in the mood. I'm buying fucking headache tablets. You know, and you're going, I got you an album. Approach me right, fucko. And then I end up being the asshole.
Tell us about the Robert De Niro one.
Okay, so Robert De Niro was in a lift with a couple of fucking thugs. And one of them says, hey, Robert, can I have a photo? Robert looks and says, if there's any paparazzi when we get out of this lift, I cannot. Until then, let's see. Go down to the third floor, gets out, paparazzi everywhere. Robert looks back and goes, what are you going to do?
Amazing.
Classic. Yeah. Classic.
That's some G shit right there.
Old school. I tell you, I met Jackie Mason once.
Oh, that's funny.
You know the Jewish comedian?
Oh, yeah. Jackie Mason.
I'm in the line now in New York City. We just fucking played Conan O'Brien. You just played Conan O'Brien. I'm feeling
this
like...
This is Dub War, is it?
Oh, this is Kindred, bro.
Is it really?
This is like 2 years into fucking when nobody was in the charts in the US and all that, when it was doing good at radio. So we did Conan O'Brien. So I came out of there. It was surreal. It was like a fucking dream. I come out of there and I'm stood in the line waiting for the cab to go to the club. Who's in the fucking line? Jackie Mason. He looks to me, he goes, you look like you want to fight. You want to fight? I goes, no, bro. And he goes, who are these guys with you? I said, oh, they're my managers. He said, they're Jewish, right? They're Jewish, right? I said, yeah. He said, they're robbing you. They're robbing you. And then his taxi company just got in and drove off. It was fucking brilliant, bro. And the guy looked at me and said, he's right.
You've met some amazing people in your times in America, like Michael Rapaport, Dick Ritchie from True Romance. Didn't you meet him on the street once?
Met him in I called him Dick Ritchie as well. He said, It's Michael. And he had his son must have been about 2 years of age on fucking Melrose. Sunday morning. He was sat just by the way you get the coffee on what do you call it? Fucking Starbucks. Just in Starbucks. Yeah, Rapaport.
How long were you living in America, Benji? How long were you away from
5 years in Florida?
Five.
5 years. People got less for murder. I had a good time in Florida. I met some beautiful people down there. I really did.
Was that during your time when you were kind of going down the spiritual road, or was that after that?
No, mate. I was totally in my evil element at that point.
That was in the evil element. When was the spiritual side?
Oh, when I was a kid.
Before
after? So much fucking street robberies and all that shit that I felt I needed to repent. I felt if I died tomorrow, Jesus would look at me and go, no way, bro. No way. You know, so I was like, I just had to get right. I just felt at the time I had to get right. That was just before I signed with Eric.
Right.
You know, the first time with Dub War. I just felt like I needed to get right. I was doing so much fucking, you know, feeling so bad about like some of the stuff I was doing to fucking people on the planet that I needed to get right, you know. I mean, when you're a kid, you do what a kid does, you know. Yeah. But going to Florida was fun. Big old fun. Yeah. Having Universal on your doorstep is pretty cool.
Well, it's all part of the journey, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. That's why you can appreciate the good times and the bad, you see? Because you got to go through all the fucking, on the mountains and you know, what do you call it? Snakes and ladders.
Well, I think if nothing else, you know, I look back on this time of, you know, the first time in my life I've really stayed still for an extended period of time. The one thing that I could take away from this is the simple things that have become profound to me. You know, the little things like taking a walk and sitting still by the river near my house and things that I just never really had the headspace or wherewithal to do because I didn't have time for it.
Well, that's right. It's like the stuff I've never been so creative in my life, in all honesty, bro. I mean, you know, the first album I had all my life to write it. Every other one after that has been like people breathing down my neck. They got to do it in 6 months. So this next album, the next lyrics I write, and the next album I release with Skindred and with Dub War, I've had fucking 2 years to write. It's the longest I've had to write. So I'm definitely saying something strong on this next few records I'm going to drop.
I love it. I love you taking the time to do that, man. That's
bro. I mean, life has given me the time because like you said, I don't have time to do anything. I'm always rushing around, but because you know what's funny? Because I'd be on tour, I'd be in fucking, I don't know, Ukraine or somewhere on stage and I go, like, 16 shows into the summer and you got another 20 left, festivals, I'd go, man, I'd love to take the summer off one day. And like what happened?
Be careful what you wish for, right?
Exactly, bro. Exactly. Yeah,
the same exact thing happened to me. I was in tears talking to my girlfriend before this, at the end of this last run.
Yeah.
Before we went out again. And I was like, man, what I wouldn't give to just see the seasons change where I live because it's so beautiful.
Yeah. You've seen it, I'm loving you.
3 days into our next tour, when we got sent home, a few days after that, she looked at me and she goes, you ready to watch the seasons change?
No, mate. I know, bro. It's a wonder my fucking girlfriend and ain't under the patio. I swear. Never spent so long
How
with her.
Julie doing? Is she good?
She's fantastic. She broke her toe the other day, but she's doing okay. She's struggling through.
Do you know what, man? I don't know many musicians that have written records in this time, and I don't judge anybody for not. I know that a lot of people have been lost for inspiration and have struggled with what to write about. The fact that you've done two doesn't surprise me at all because you're always working on something, whether it's, you know, the fucking Tom Waits side project, the reggae solo stuff. Can you give us a little bit of a window into some of it?
Well, I mean, I'm talking like me and the guys from Dub War. When I say Dub War, me and Richie and Jeff, Mikey Craig plays the live drums with us now, from Newport Boy as well. At the beginning of this thing, I mean, I was working with the Skindred guys doing an album, but I said, you know what? I'll see what the guys from Dub War are doing. So instead of just getting like Mikey to do all the songs, we sent some tracks out to some people like Mike Borden, you know, Jamie from Snart, Dave from El Nino, Tanner Wayne from Roy from fucking Stone Sour. So many guys we sent music to. Mike Borden from Faith No More. We sent just, I mean, click tracks and the guitar and the vocals. And they sent back these monster tracks, bro. It's incredible. So I'm really excited about that because it's like the dub war thing's different from what I've done in a long time, you know?
Because it's an album full of guest drummers.
Yeah, full of guest drummers. I mean, I thought, who's going to be at home doing fuck all now? The drummers are going to be the ones at home, most of them anyway, you know?
Yeah.
The ones who are not programming and producing and whatnot, you know? But I reached out to them guys and they said, yeah, and the songs are sounding so good. I'm excited to hear what people feel about them.
That's awesome. I love dub war. I can't wait to hear that.
Yeah, man, it's good stuff, bro. I'm excited. I got Mikey, like I said, I got Mikey Dolan on one track and the guy from, and Jamie from Snot on one track, you know, so it, and it's all very much the time we just in, the last 2 years we just in, lyrically is all over there, you know? Mm. Yeah, man.
When are we going to hook you two up?
Well, what, do you want to sing on the new dub war Skin Dread record, bro?
Don't threaten me with a good time.
No, I listen. I'll talk to my boys and we'll chuck a track your way, and we'll see what you got.
Yeah.
Let's see how easy it is, Matt.
How funny is that?
Yeah, it's got to happen, man.
I'll talk to Dan today and say what track, because we've written like 45 songs, right?
Wow.
It's pretty fucking cool, right? They're all as strong as each other. I must say, I'm excited, bro. They're all as strong as each other. It's not like, oh, maybe this part could do with it. No. Verse, chorus, middle eight, slamming, boom, boom. It's all up there, bro. It's all up there. And it's like 40 of them. So I'm going to say to Dan, send me a track that you think that me and my homie can meet together on and plus that.
All right. What's up?
That's the vibe, bro. Serious. Excited.
Hell yeah.
Benji, big love to you, man. It's been, you know, an amazing 10 years getting to know you. And yeah, the two of you are probably my dearest friends in, you know, this crazy business of music that we're in. And I think there's no coincidence that both of you, you know, live and breathe the art. It's more than just a job, isn't it? And I think that's one thing all three of us kind of connect over is we don't just get paid to do what we love. We actually live this life, you know, 24/7. And
I'm excited. I got a DJ set on Saturday, right, in Connacht. And I'm as excited about playing Connacht as I was playing Brixton Academy. I don't know. There could be fucking 8 people in there, but I'm going to give it all I got and have a good fucking time, you know?
That's it, man. It's all about spreading that love and that vibration and watching the effect that it has in real time. I just did a DJ gig last week. It was a punk reggae gig and wasn't a lot of people there, but the people kept coming up and being like...
It's not about the amount of people. It's about the size of the dog. It's about the size of the fight in the dark.
Yeah. Love it. Bless up. Perfect way to end it. Look at it. Love it. This is a first for Stoke the Fire. He's stoking the fire right now.
I am right in the area. Yeah, that was good, guys. Thank you very much for inviting me along, man.
Oh, man, a pleasure. It definitely boosted my spirits.
I don't know, because you know what I'm like. I'm random as fuck, so I most probably took it on 50 million different journeys, you know?
Mate, it was perfect, as I knew it would be. And, you know, what I've loved about doing these is, like, me and Jesse haven't seen each other in person since pre-pandemic. And every time we finish a chat with someone, I just think in my head, like, oh, I can't wait for the day, one day, when whether it's a festival or whatever it is, when the three of us get to share, you know real space together.
You know what hurt me the other day? Seeing pictures of you at Bloodstock and knowing that I wasn't there. I was like, this fucking guy chose Priest Day?
No, it's not that I chose it, dude. It's because I'm DJing Fridays and Saturdays now.
Where to?
In London, man. I've been doing that for about 5 weeks now, and it's just been great getting back out and earning money. But yeah, it wasn't the choice of Priest over my brother. It was because Sunday is the only day I can do because I DJ Fridays and Saturdays. I'd never disrespect you like that.
I would have wanted to do Priest Day. Rob Alford, man. You see, a lot of these rock people like Rob Alford, you know, fucking, what's the name of the band? Like, Ice Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I never knew about them. Them vocalists are like fucking supermen and women, bro.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Rob Alford and Ice Earth, I don't know, but the last singer who sang for Ice Earth, I seen him in Germany. We had a day off in the Market Halle. I know you know that place, right? We had a day off at the Market Halle in Hamburg, and we went to watch them. Bro, I stood at the back and thought, I'll just go. I've got nothing else to do. That vocalist was killing it.
Yeah, I don't know how those dudes do that shit, man. High end, bro.
High end. All right, gentlemen, have a wonderful evening. Have a wonderful day, Jess. Bless up. I'm going to send you the tune as soon as I talk to Dan. Actually, I'm going to pick up my phone and call him now. I love you guys. Yeah, man.
Big up, Benji. Nice one, dude.
Peace.
There you go. Looks like you're making a track with Skindred.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.